We are breaking down all aspects of Yankee baseball. This is the Bronx Pinstripe Show with your hosts, Andrew Rotondi and Scott Reinen. Let's go.
What's up, everyone? Welcome to the Bronx Pinstripe Show, episode 116. You may or may not be able to tell that my voice is a little hoarse. Scott, I was screaming my ass off over that Super Bowl Patriots win on Sunday night. I know this is going to piss a lot of fans of this podcast off. It's going to piss you off, but I could not help but get excited about that unbelievable game.
Yeah, I think what a lot of people may not know, if there's any newer listeners to the show, is that you grew up in Rhode Island. Your father made you a Yankees fan, so it was kind of osmosis at that point. You were taught, but you were living in Patriots country at that point, and you became a very big Patriots fan.
Yeah,
I'm a Jets fan, as you know. It's sad, but I'm more of the tri-state sports crowd, and I'm a little jealous. I got to be honest. I'm a little jealous.
Slightly spoiled as a sports fan.
Yes, you are. I think up until last night, the majority of my hatred was going towards the Patriots. And I think now it's really just directed at the Patriots fans. That's where I am. Yeah.
I don't blame you on that. I mean, regardless if you're a Patriots fan, I mean, the thing is, you're either a Patriots fan or a Patriots hater. There's no real middle ground, it seems like, for a lot of football fans. But that game was the wildest football game I've ever seen, whether or not you're a Patriots fan or not.
Yeah, I mean, it was the biggest comeback in Super Bowl history. The fact that the Falcons didn't do anything after that, I guess they scored in the first or the second drive of the second half, right? And then,
yeah.
Nothing. I mean, just
that's
it
at
was
that
just,
point, 28-3.
Game
I
over.
I have a bunch of friends over. Half of them are Patriots fans. We're looking at each other like, all right, this is going to be a long second half, but hopefully the clock goes fast and they don't lose by 40.
And every other fan of any other team was sending text messages to anybody they knew
that was
a Patriots fan at that point.
It was brutal.
And now we're all eating our own shit. Because
I saw you.
I did the same thing. Oh, yeah. No, I didn't do it.
You tweeted from...
No, I said on Bronx Pinstripes, all I was doing was saying that someone who played for the Falcons played for the Yankees. So,
yes.
Obviously, we had to, root for Primetime and Dion. It was a very... natural move. It wasn't anything out of the ordinary. And New York team, of course, we're going to root against the Boston team. Of course. So,
I did think the video you tweeted and put on Instagram of Jimmy Larritz going yard in '96 World Series was against Atlanta was fitting.
Yeah. Thank you.
How wild is it that Atlanta's '95 World Series is that city's only championship?
I didn't even realize that in all honesty until I saw this happened, and the first thing that came to my mind was 96. So I went out and was like looking for that GIF everywhere, and I finally got it. And I'm thankful for the Patriots win so I could send that out because that felt good to send that out, I guess. And I do have some fans that are some buddies that are Falcons fans from Atlanta. So I was giving them endless shit because literally this is, that's destroying as a fan. Like, I don't know how you come back from that. That's like, that's 2004 for us. That's basically what that is.
Yeah. It was 2000. I still think 2004 will forever be the worst collapse in sports history, but this is up there. It's got to be up there. And the poor owner, Arthur Blank, and his wife just on the sidelines, looking like they want to die at the end.
Yeah,
I couldn't help but laugh that because they showed him in the first half and they were going bonkers, and then they just look catatonic on the sideline. That's why you don't go down to the sideline. George Steinbrenner would never have done that. He was always so fearful of a jinx. He wouldn't even let anyone in the Yankees clubhouse, never mind go on the sidelines or anything like that.
Matt Ryan was he showed, this is exactly who I thought Matt Ryan was. Everybody's like, oh, Matt Ryan, MVP, greatest year of his career and all that stuff. I'm like,
Matty Ice.
I'm like, show it to me, please. Matty Ice came from Boston College, though. Matty Ice did not develop in Atlanta. So
do
when
you know
your,
why they
when
call
you get
him-
your college. When you get your college nickname and it moves to the pros and it's just like everybody just assumes that that's what you are, but he's not. I don't know the story behind it, but I know it came from Boston College.
Yes. So you'd think Matty Ice meaning clutch, right? Ice water in his veins. No, it's because he used to drink natural ice.
Are you
in college? That was his beer.
See, I didn't even know that until right now.
Yeah. That was his beer of choice.
Oh, that's ridiculous.
So it wasn't even that he was clutch. It's just that he liked to get shit faced on Natty Ice.
So it has nothing to do with his performance on the field.
No, I'm sure. I mean, somewhat, because he was a great quarterback in college, but his friends called him Matty Ice because it sounds like Natty Ice, and he loved Natty Ice.
Wow. So, first of all, I'm judging him for enjoying Natty Ice because it's terrible.
Oh, we all enjoyed it at one point. So, you know, sophomore year of college.
Oh, never the ice. Never the ice.
Yeah, it was deadly.
But it's terrible when you look at what happened. And I just, you know, when they came back and they came within a touchdown, I'm like, this is it. They're going to win this game. I mean, there's no doubt about it. You cannot stop what's happening right now. And Matty Ice is shook. I mean, that whole team is just like, what just happened? Their center is on like one leg. He probably can't move it at this point at the end of the game with a fractured fibula or whatever he had. Like, it's just bad news. You cannot stop this train that's happening. And Belichick and Brady they're going to crush you. And they did.
It was an idle freight train in the first half for the Patriots. And then that little stone got kicked out from underneath the wheel and they got rolling. And by the time the last drive of the game, they were going a million miles an hour. Atlanta had no shot in overtime.
Oh, no. They had to get the ball. I knew as soon as they got the ball, it was over. It was, I was waiting for, who's number 18? Who's the guy who had the toss? I thought it was James White who called the coin toss.
Oh, it was 18. I don't know who that is. I think.
Okay, whatever. He was like, I got the ball. I was waiting for like, I got the ball and we're going to win type of, I was waiting for something. I'm like, give me something stupid, please.
We'll take the trophy.
Yeah, give me something stupid.
How about Roger getting booed? Booed out of town.
See, that was the silver lining, I think. You know, as much as I don't like the Patriots, the whole Deflategate thing to me is ridiculous. As long as I'll always talk about the fact that he's a cheater and all this because it's part of my defense. It's a defense mechanism, right? So I'll always use it. But I'm kind of joking at the same time because it's so stupid. Right. And the fact that...
At least you acknowledge that.
It is. It's ridiculous. Everybody does something like that. It's so ridiculous. You know, don't lie about it, though. Just own up to it. That was the dumb part on their part. Anyway, the fact that Goodell got all of that and it was just literally just like shoving it directly at him.
I think that might be the loudest boo I've ever heard in sports.
Yeah, it was pretty loud. And then what's his face? Kraft.
Yeah,
just basically gave it right to him and as soon as he started opening his mouth. And it was bad. I mean, and then Brady filmed that commercial.
Yeah,
I saw the commercial afterwards. Yeah, well, that's a local commercial.
That went viral, but that is a local commercial.
Yeah, yeah. But that's, I mean.
He was mocked for that the original version of that commercial when it's just the four rings because it's horrible. He's not, you know, say what you want about Peyton versus Brady. Peyton was a funny actor. He was great when he was on SNL. He did hilarious commercials. Brady is not on the level of acting as Peyton. So it was kind of like awkward. So he was kind of mocked for those commercials.
But one thing I've noticed about Brady is that you don't see Brady on the national spotlight very often. But when you go up into the Boston area, he's on billboards. Yeah. He's on commercials. He's all over the place locally.
It's him, Gronk, and David Ortiz.
Yeah, and Edelman. Edelman seems like he's on a lot of stuff too. But he's actually on national stuff as well. But I think they have more of a prominence locally in advertising and marketing, whereas they do national. So I don't know, you know, whatever. It's indisputable how good he is and how good Belichick is. It's just it cannot be denied. It just can't be. So
no, that kind of takes some of the wind out of my sails.
Yeah, I know, and that's also a little bit. I'm happy that like now there's nobody can get angry about it because it's pretty much indisputable at this point. The only thing anybody ever says is Montana didn't lose a Super Bowl.
Yeah, that true. But now they have five. So and it's not like they're doesn't seem like they're going to be done anytime soon.
Well, that's the worst. That's the worst part.
I do want to make. I tweeted this out after the game. I compared the Patriots to those 96 to 03, I guess, Yankees teams. Where they would just pull wins out of their ass that you thought they were dead in the water. And that's what that game was in the Super Bowl. And I know a lot of fans probably hate me right now. A lot of listeners of our podcast are like, Andrew, shut the hell up. But it's undeniable. There are some comparisons to be made there.
Yeah, I mean, just looking at Brady and Jeter – you know they're similar, I think, in like sports figures, kind of the way that they've handled each other, each career individually off the field as well. They've always been relatively quiet and I think very PC. So I think they've they draw comparisons in that way, and they're both the leadership of those teams. So, you know, I think the comparison is pretty natural.
Absolutely. All right, let's move on from the Super Bowl. I promise we will be talking baseball in this podcast. Hey, guess who's back? Burnt out attorney, Empire Squire. He gives us a stat for episode 116. I don't think we've had this since before we reached 100. But he says, for episode 116, Hideki Matsui, and I guess Matsui has a Twitter account, I did not know that, at M55Baseball's 2005 RBI total was 116. It was Godzilla's career high in pinstripes. Love it, burnt out attorney, bringing the stats back.
Yeah, he says he's back. So that was a little bit of an off.
I don't know where he went, but
it was off season. You know, he had to, I guess, to take care of his body and take care of his mind, make sure he was all right for the upcoming season. So it's, I guess he's now is picking the ball back up and starting to get ready for the season. So appreciate it. I think it adds a very nice element of statistics to the beginning of our show.
Absolutely. And it's a perfect segue to our Fan Shop 25% off coupon for the week. The code will be Godzilla in honor of Matsui and his 116 RBIs. So again, get 25% off for the next week in the Fan Shop using code Godzilla. And we will be giving out a new code every week on this podcast. Scott, you getting excited for March 24th and 25th? I feel that now that the Super Bowl is behind us, I'm really starting to look forward to baseball season. And it's a month and a half away, and we'll be in Tampa for spring training.
Yeah, definitely. I think the Super Bowl is kind of the very soft closing or hard closing of football, and then a soft opening for baseball because our minds and our brains are starting to go towards baseball now. It's the next thing. Unless you're looking at horrible New York, New Jersey basketball, or you're watching hockey, which I don't watch hockey anymore, so I have no idea what's happening there. But yeah, it's baseball season as far as I'm concerned. I mean, it's ready to go. I'm really excited for this year.
There are two seasons in my sports life, baseball and football.
Yeah, me too. At this point now, yeah. But March 24th and 25th is when we will be in Tampa. That's Friday and Saturday. We'll be at both of those games. And then Andrew and I will both be leaving Tampa on Sunday. So if you are planning on going down to spring training, definitely try to work it around 24th and 25th. We are going to set up an event for, you know, Friday night, Saturday night, one of the two, if not both. And we're going to get together with all the guys that are guys and girls who are going down there. I've heard from some girls who are going down there. I've heard from some guys who are going down there and going to meet up. So it's definitely making me more excited that a lot of the people listening to the podcast are going to be going down there and joining us too. So that'll be a lot of fun.
Hell yeah. I'm looking forward to meeting some of the people.
Yeah, definitely.
Over the next couple of weeks, we will decide on a location, on an exact date and time, and we'll be sharing those details. So definitely keep an eye out for that. The 61 movie podcast is going to happen despite what some people think. Both Scott and I have watched the movie. It's just a matter of finding some time to record it. So hopefully we'll get to that later this week, and it'll be out soon after. So again, send in some tweets, mailbags, if you want to watch the movie and contribute to the podcast. All right. So last week I talked about The Last Night of the Yankees Dynasty, which was about Buster Olney's book about 2001. I finished it. It's a quick read, so definitely recommend the read. It's got a lot of good nuggets of information about the 1990s Yankees.
A lot of pictures?
Not many pictures. There's a few pictures, but
what's a quick read for you? Are we talking like 250, 200 pages?
I don't know. It took me a week to read. Just commuting to and from work. I think it's like 330 pages.
Okay, that's like 3 months for me.
Yeah, but
that's a solid 2 to 3 months.
It's like there's nothing too intense in there. You're just kind of breezing through it.
Yeah, I got you.
I want to talk about Steinbrenner though, and I understand that a lot of it is probably Buster's opinion on Steinbrenner, but he kind of he was hard on Steinbrenner, especially towards the end of the book. He kind of sets it up where Steinbrenner caused the Yankees to be horseshit in the 80s. And then he left baseball and let Stick Michael and Cashman take over. And that's why the Yankees 90s dynasty happened. And then after the 0-1 collapse, not collapse, the 0-1 loss to the Diamondbacks in Game 7, Steinbrenner again stepped up and said, this is not happening again. I'm taking over, and started to make a lot of the decisions, like trading for Raul Mondesi, not signing Andy Pettitte, letting David Wells go. bringing in Gary Sheffield instead of Vlad Guerrero, and we found ourselves in a similar situation. Not like the 80s, because those Yankees teams in the 2003 to 2008 were still good, but they didn't even win a playoff series. So it kind of was eye-opening to see that if Steinbrenner really did have a heavy hand in that, maybe we have to change our opinion on how good of an owner he is.
Well, you know, I think that it's not an unknown that Steinbrenner liked his flashy toys, right? So he was always looking to go out and get the next guy. And I think a lot of that had to do with his business acumen, where he wanted to bring in butts in the seats to see this flashy guy. It's more of a marketing thing. He definitely wasn't, I mean, he was never known for being a baseball guy on the field as far as the X's and O's and knowing what to do and how to bring in these pieces. So I think that part of his legacy is kind of always there. There's a little bit of a Jerry Jones thing going on, right? Where there was sometimes too much meddling, but when he backs up a little bit and lets the baseball people do their jobs, you start seeing different results. And that's what happened when Stick Michael was there and then Cashman early on. So I don't know if that's so much of an unknown, but you know, I think you hear about it most when you're talking about the 80s, you know, and like the very early, you know, probably the 80s the most. You don't hear much more about that after 2000.
Me neither. And I knew about all the 80s stuff and the whole Dave Winfield mess and bringing in a bunch of free agents that didn't really fit together. I thought he was still out of it after 2001. I did not realize he had that much say in the early 2000s. I thought that was he was still taking a back seat.
But do you think that's a lot of speculation on what happened from Buster Olney?
No, I mean, he interviewed over 100 people for this book. He said in the end, he listed all the people he interviewed. This is direct, you know, direct information. I mean, he was covering the team for a decade.
Right. Yeah. No, that's interesting as far as, you know, how the decisions were made at that time. So I don't know, man. I think, like I said, I think Steinbrenner was an owner who demanded greatness from his team. And we saw the best results when the baseball people made the baseball decisions.
Absolutely. And then also, and Buster also wrote that he, that Brian Cashman tried to quit multiple times in the early 2000s.
And he wasn't allowed, he just didn't let him happen?
Well, it was sort of like after 2000, his contract was up after 2003 and he wanted out. He signed on for one more year, and then after 04, he definitely wanted out, but I guess the Yankees had an option on his contract, which I didn't know was possible for GMs, and they picked it up. So he had to come back for 2005.
Oh, that's the worst. You got to go back and be the general manager of the New York Yankees. Damn it.
Well, I think if you look at before and after pictures of Cashman back in like 1998 versus 2005, it might have been 7 years, but he aged about 17 years.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely a high stress job for sure.
Yeah, it's like those before and after pictures of Obama in the presidency.
Right.
It was a good read. That was a fun read. Maybe I'll let you borrow my copy when we're down in spring training.
Sweet.
And you can give it back to me 4 years later.
Yeah, without reading the whole thing, probably.
Not really much going on. We're sort of in the quiet before the storm, right? Pitchers and catchers are reporting in about a week from now. I think the Yankees report on Valentine's Day, right?
The 14th. Yeah.
Yeah. Yep. So, that's next Tuesday. So we'll start to get a lot more stories, I think, coming out then, but until then it's kind of quiet. I was kind of just bored at work one day, going through some of the baseball websites, like FanGraphs or Baseball Reference or name any of the ones that you like. And I came upon, team war projections from FanGraphs. And it kind of, I never really thought, I know you love when I start to bring up the sabermetrics.
Yeah, let's get nerdy. Let's do it. Let's dive in.
So I never, obviously war for a single player, it's like an overall statistic that measures how good the player is, their worth to the team. I never really thought about it from a team perspective. When you add up all of the positions, what does your team war equal? And I was shocked to find out how highly ranked the Yankees were according to Fangraphs. Fangraphs ranked them eighth in all of majors. So only behind the Dodgers, the Cubs, the Red Sox, the Indians, the Nationals, the Astros, and the Giants. All playoff teams last year, with the exception of the Astros, but we think the Astros are going to be one of the best teams in the American League this year. So there's those seven teams, and then the Yankees are eighth. I was shocked to see that.
Yeah, you definitely, when you think about the teams in all of baseball and you're thinking of rankings and who's going to be there, I wouldn't say the majority of people would put the Yankees eighth, which is
in the playoffs. That's in the playoffs.
Yeah, there's six division winners and then two more. So yeah, that's crazy. Well, I'm curious to what you're about to say, you know, like what kind of, how they got to this point.
Yeah.
And it seems like just off the top, when you're saying that they're eighth, it seems like they're being very, very friendly with with the projections. It seems like they're being very much on the high side of a lot of these guys, which, you know, we know is we're walking into another one of these seasons where, you know, everything's got to go right. And it sounds like Fangraphs thinks things are going to go right.
You could look at it that way, but I think what it speaks to is the Yankees' overall depth, 1 through 25 on the roster. And maybe they definitely don't have the Mike Trout superstar or the ace, Chris Sale pitcher or something like that. Or Clayton Kershaw pitcher. That's going to give you the really high WAR, but they have a lot of positions that are 2 to 4 WAR for, and that adds up. So when you look, catcher is their highest ranked position, which obviously they are projecting Gary Sanchez to have a monster year, but shortstop's 2.5, third base is 2.4, which I laughed at. Left field and center field are both 2, so those sort of add up, and you get to a point where they've got 40.3 WAR. One thing that I did notice, though, is that their bullpen does account for quite a bit of that, and that worries me because Dellin Betances, Aroldis Chapman, Tyler Clipper, they're going to rack up the WARs, but that doesn't necessarily mean your team is playing well, because that could mean they're pitching a lot of innings because the starters aren't going deep in games. So just because a relief pitcher is racking up WAR does not mean they're winning games.
Right. So we're walking into a situation that we did similar to last year where the big question marks are on the rotation. We have this monster in the back of the bullpen. This year, it's not quite the monster, but it's extremely formidable. You know, it's a good back of the bullpen. The middle relief will probably be better this year, but the big question mark is the starting rotation once again.
Yep, yeah, they ranked third best bullpen on Fangraphs behind the Dodgers and the Indians, and obviously the Indians have Miller, the Dodgers have Jansen. So those are all great relief pitchers as well. And the Yankees are third rate behind them. But then you look at their starting rotation and it's far from the top.
Yeah. Well, there's a lot of unknown in our rotation. This, again, when we talk about the projections and when we look forward to what is going to happen in 2017, we're always talking about, well, if this goes right. And it's kind of similar to last year. Only last year, we were really more talking about injuries. If people would say healthy. This year is like, well, people got to take that next step. If this guy takes that next step, if this guy stays, true to what he was last year, then the Yankees could be this. So there's just a lot of unknowns, because I think now, whereas before it was injuries, now it's just a lot of short careers that we don't really have a mean for at this point, you know? So
well,
we have
I like
to
it
have,
better.
They have to play more. Oh, it's more fun, no doubt.
Because instead
you're not dealing with old guys.
Instead of, it's like glass half full or glass half empty kind of thing. Instead of rooting or holding your breath to make sure injuries don't happen, you're just rooting for a guy to keep progressing and become a good player.
Yeah. Oh, by far, it's more fun as a fan. There's no doubt about that.
Our expectations are lower, so we can only get more excited instead of disappointed.
That's what's fun. That's why we've been trying to tell everybody listening to the show to temper the expectations. Let's get them adjusted and lowered so that we can all be very excited when they exceed them. And if they don't, if that does happen, then, you know, we'll be ready for it. So it's a really good mindset.
Why do you think August and September of last year was so much fun?
Yeah, because it was unexpected.
Zero expectations, and we could just enjoy the team winning without the pressure of all those old players on the roster. So I think, though, there is something to be said for the 1 through 25, and they're even projecting into the minor league system because they go 3 deep on a lot of these depth charts. So it's really 1 through 40. It's really the 40-man roster. For the Yankees, is pretty deep, a lot deeper than a lot of teams.
The only thing I'll say about this like overall WAR thing, and maybe I'm way off just because these numbers, you know, make me crazy, but it seems like a lot of other players, if other teams have you know, better players at certain positions, and then their backups aren't very good. That kind of averages it out. Whereas the Yankees, you know, I think it's a lot closer. If you're looking at the starter and then the guys behind the starters on the Yankees depth chart, it's a lot closer in talent. It's a lot closer in numbers than if you're to get like these perennial starters for years and years on some of these other teams, because there's so many new and young players. So
that's a good point.
I don't know if that like averages it out and then makes the WAR higher because the backups are maybe a little bit better than backups on other teams that have higher caliber starting players.
That's a great point. And that's why this is not a perfect, statistic to look at.
Yeah.
It does not translate directly to win-loss record, clearly, because I'm sure a lot of these predictions will be wrong. But I was surprised to see the Yankees near the top of the league versus in the middle or in the lower third, which is where I expected them to be.
Yeah, but you know what? It's February, and predictions are what we have to work with, and that's what we're going to do.
We're going to go through all sorts. The amount of predictions over the next month are going to make your head spin. And I'm going to dig up all sorts of stats to make you pissed off about projections for this season. I'm sure I'll find one next week that says the Yankees will be the eighth worst team in the league.
Yeah, I'm sure it exists. It's some ridiculous acronym that somebody made up in some basement.
Only the Giants, though, are projected to have higher WAR at catcher. Obviously, Buster Posey,
yeah.
So
that's a lot. I mean, that's a lot of respect for a guy that only played, you know,
50 games.
Less than half of a season. Yeah. That's a lot of respect.
Hey, speaking of Sanchez, we talked about the World Baseball Classic last week, but I guess he's still TBD on the Dominican World Baseball Classic team. So Sanchez might play for them.
Yeah, I mean, when we were talking about that, we didn't really have an answer from Sanchez. I was curious about that because we, you know, how we talked about the Dominican and like Venezuela. These teams are very, very, they're extremely patriotic, and they have a lot of belief in their country and that team. And I was surprised that the powers that be and the other guys on that team didn't recruit him to play.
I would really like to see
him put the pressure on.
Yeah, I'd really like to see him stick in camp though and work with the pitchers.
Oh, no doubt. Like I said before, I want every Yankee to not play. I mean, it's totally selfish because I don't want any injuries. I want them to get as much work with their own guys, especially a catcher and the young pitching staff that we have. Look, Sanchez seems like a grizzly vet. The way he handles himself, he seems like he's beyond his years as far as maturity and the way he approaches the game. So I have a little bit of faith that he's going to make the right decision and realize that yes, this time in the spring training with the young pitchers and with the rest of the team is extremely important because he's got to be a leader on this team. So I kind of feel like he knows that.
I hope he knows that. I mean, this spring
doesn't
training,
it feel like that? He knows that though, doesn't it? Don't you like when you look at him and you hear everything? Like he is Gary. Of course he knows that.
Wouldn't you say this spring training it might be the most important for the Yankees in years? Maybe since 2009 when they brought in all those new players.
Yeah, there's a lot of new faces this year. There's a lot of new faces, no doubt. And some of the old faces are now teachers. They're coming in, they're instructors.
I mean,
some of the old faces from last year are now instructors.
Yeah, I mean, when after Jeter left or after Mo left, you still had Jeter and A-Rod and Teixeira. Then
right.
Jeter left, you still had A-Rod and Teixeira, and now both those guys are gone. So and McCann's no longer there. I mean.
Yeah, Gardy's the old head.
Gardner's the old veteran. Ellsbury, I don't think he can open his mouth and talk, so he's not going to be saying anything.
He's not a Yankee.
You'd expect guys like Starlin Castro and Didi. I know Didi's playing for the Dutch, but I mean, how many Dutch baseball players are there? I feel like Didi's the best
player. How long are they going to be in the WBC? Maybe that's part of the decision. Like, we might only play like two games.
Was it double elimination? So they'll make it two games.
Yeah, they're not going to be very. They're not going to go very far.
But if Didi, I'm pretty confident. He's been there 2 years, and he's a position player. The catcher position makes it that much more important that you're there in camp.
Yeah, and you know what the presence of like Starlin Castro and Sanchez and you know some of these other the Hispanic players that you know when Starlin Castro was in Chicago and he had that song, if you remember, and the whole place went nuts. And we were really hoping that he was going to bring that over with him and, like, you know, have the stadium go nuts when he comes up. I don't know. I feel like maybe there's going to be a little bit more of excitement from like Castro, who might take on more of a leadership role. Didi was a fun guy. I feel like there's going to be that exuberance, more of an excitement in the clubhouse. One that we haven't seen in a long time. Even that young team in 96, it wasn't like these flashy guys who had a little bit more excitement. I think this team is very different in that sense. So I think we're going to see some different leadership styles than we've seen in a long time on this team.
Gary seems to want the leadership role. Think about
he's silent. He's a quiet guy, it seems.
No, but think about last year. He was tweeting and saying publicly that he believes in this team. No one is believing in them, but he was speaking out saying that we can still make the playoffs. When have you ever seen a rookie who was in the major leagues for a couple weeks at that point say something like that?
Well, yeah, and I think you have social media now, these guys are all very comfortable on social media. They know what they're doing, and I think this is the first wave of that, right, of those guys who are extremely comfortable, who grew up with it, and we're going to see different. We've already seen how these guys interact differently on social media than any other Yankees team ever. And that just comes with the time, I think, and the generation. But I don't know. In person, he seems like more of a stoic, lead by example type guy. I know he comes on and says the right thing on Twitter and things like that. And that's cool. I do appreciate that. It definitely, makes the fan base go nuts. But in the clubhouse, in the field, for me, from looking on the outside in, he seems more of like that stoic, lead by example guy.
Yeah. We don't know what's going on in the clubhouse, obviously.
Right. That's true.
All right. You ready to get into some mailbags? Not really many other Yankees topics unless you've got something that you want to spitball here.
No, I think we've covered a lot of these. We've pretty much covered everything. I mean, if we're going to, the first mailbag is also something we've covered, but we're going to talk about it anyway.
Well, there's a little angle to it, but we've been going strong every week in the off season, and pretty much the only Yankees podcast I think out there that's doing that. So we have certainly talked about everything there is to talk about.
So if you haven't given us a 5-star rating and review in iTunes, considering we have done this every single week in the off season, hint, this is a very good opportunity for you to go and say, these guys are awesome. We love them. Please, we always appreciate that. 5-star reviews in iTunes. Anytime you want to do that, we always appreciate it.
Do you remember when we were going into the offseason the first time and we were worried that we were only going to get to maybe do like 15, 20-minute podcasts because there'd be nothing to talk about?
Yeah. I think at this time, first when we start the show, we just like start going on tangents. And then, I don't know, you and I have done this so many times that we seem to run, go down rabbit holes quite often.
We've done it 116 times plus one of the lost footage from spring training.
Yeah. Pour one out for that. Pour one out for my homie on that one. That was a tough episode.
All right. First mailbag comes from John Preston from the Sticks of Idaho. He says, if Gleyber Torres is the real deal, in a perfect world, how would you like to see his call up to the bigs handled? What position do you want him to play since there are talks of moving him from shortstop? And when would you like to see him called up? Personally, I'd like to see Headley traded and then move Starlin or Gleyber to third. But I wanted to know your thoughts. Keep up the great work. I love listening to the show. So, yes, we have talked about this. I know we talked about Gleyber in depth and about his whole transition around the infield maybe 3 weeks ago. Maybe there's some new listeners since then. But it's a first world problem to have to deal with such a high prospect coming up that we just don't know where we can fit him into the lineup. That's a really good problem to have. So I'm not really going to worry about it until the time comes that we need to fit Gleyber into the lineup and there's nowhere to put him. That would be awesome if that's how it works out.
Look, there's no doubt about it. You're absolutely right. If you're looking for some more information on him, one of our new guys writing on Bronx Pinstripes, Adam English, actually took a closer look at the stats of Torres, Frazier, and Sheffield. So go check that out on the site. The Torres, everybody's talking about what position he's going to play. If Didi keeps projecting, where he is, and he's done a good job so far. Look, I'm gonna throw two names at you and tell me what they have in common. Alex Rodriguez, Cal Ripken Jr.
Steroids.
Okay. I cannot say Cal Ripken Jr. did steroids, so stop it.
Bite your tongue. I got some Cal Ripken Jr. tidbits from that book if you want me to throw them in right now.
No, hold on. Let me get to my point first. The point is these guys moved positions, and they did it just fine. The fact of the matter is if Gleyber Torres is knocking down the door and he needs to come up, the Yankees will make room for him. They will make it work one way or another. Whether he needs to move positions is second base or third base, wherever it may be. If we're talking about a guy who's going to move position, we've talked about this ad nauseum, and I think this is something that was predicted by Andrew and myself last year. That I definitely think that Starlin Castro will move to third base at some point. I think that's a position that he could absolutely make. He's played short. He's been on the left side. He's got the lower half to be a third baseman. I think the kid is
got
a
the
natural.
Junk in the trunk.
He's got the junk. He's going to move over there. He's got the Adrian Beltre body, if you will. I think Gleyber Torres initially coming up, if Didi projects and still stays at this path and is playing a good defensive shortstop like he does, the guy's he's got a ridiculous arm. He's got great range. He makes the plays. He's become a plus bat, in my opinion. I think Gleyber Torres could start at second base. Now, does that mean he's going to stay at second base? No, it does not mean that. I think this day and age, with all the shifting and all the moving around in the field, it's so important for these guys to have experience on both sides of second base, because if you are going to be moving around, whether it's a left-handed or right-handed bat, you may be positioned on either side, so you have to be comfortable with that. So I think the infielder of today is a lot more flexible with the position. And this week we saw on Instagram, we put out an article about it. Again, one of our new guys, Jared Saul, put out an article about the Instagram post that we saw Gleyber Torres working with the one and only shortstop wizard. I can't think of his name right now. It's killing me.
I really don't know who you're talking about.
The Cleveland Indians, the shortstop.
Oh, Marvisquel.
Thank you. Jesus. Omar Vizquel, he was working with him in Miami, and that's nothing but positive, because I think everything that we've heard about Gleyber offensively has been positive, but I think the one area that he has, places to improve is at short or in the field. So the fact that he's working with a guy like Omar Vizquel, who is a freaking legend, one, speaks to his maturity, and also speaks to the fact that he really does know that he needs to improve, work with the best, and gain some flexibility on the infield. So I'm not worried about it.
Why are so many Yankees fans so anxious to move Didi from shortstop? The dude hit 20 home runs and played a tremendous shortstop, the best defensive shortstop we've had since like 1990s Derek Jeter. Why are we so ready to move him from his position? He's 27, going to be 28 years old this year. He's still in his prime.
He just last year learned how to hit left-handed pitching also. I mean, this guy is tracking up. He's a bit of a late bloomer in the sense where his prime is coming maybe a year or two late. And that's probably because he hasn't had the opportunity. I mean, last year was really his first full year to go out there and do something. So, I don't know. I don't get that. I really don't. I mean, I'm a Didi fan big time, and I love him off the field. I love him on the field. I think he's a guy who has a long future with the Yankees.
All right, you ready for my Cal Ripken Jr. stuff?
Yeah.
So
I'm a little nervous on what you got with this one, though.
They were talking about the 1990s Baltimore Orioles and how that team was filled with a bunch of dogs who didn't really try hard. They would dick around on road trips. None of them would hustle out of the bases. They signed Albert Bell, who was a complete jackass, totally tore that team apart. And many people around the league wondered how come Cal Ripken Jr., a legend in Baltimore, couldn't be a glue in that clubhouse and bring that team together. And some people speculated that he actually liked his teammates acting like assholes because it made him look tougher and more like a grinder.
So he wanted these guys to act up so he looked better.
Yes.
Like, you guys,
look at me, I'm going to play 2,500 consecutive games or whatever it was, and you can't even run hard to first base. You stink. But he wouldn't go and confront him about it. He would just complain about it to the media to make so he would look better.
Yeah, this totally sounds like someone just has sour grapes about Cal Ripken. It's like talking shit about him.
I don't know why I kind of dislike Cal Ripken, but I do.
Yeah, I've always been a Cal Ripken fan for whatever reason. I think I had an appreciation for him too, because when I was a kid, I actually went to a lot of games at Memorial as well before Camden Yards was even built. My stepmother is from Baltimore, so I was down there quite a bit, and I saw I don't know 50 games at Memorial Stadium, and I saw a lot of Cal Ripken playing. A lot of those were Yankee games, but I don't know. I've always had a respect for that guy. The fact that he was, you know, chasing Lou Gehrig's record, I think to me kind of put him in a different place than any other player on another team.
If he took a day off in 1989, would he have been a legend?
I don't know.
No.
Well, I mean, it doesn't matter. He didn't. So it's a moot point. Because
I wonder how he was able to play all those games in a row.
Sheer heart and determination.
Oh, boy.
And a lot of coffee.
A lot of greenies.
Yeah.
All right, what do we have next?
All right, so the next one is from Andrew in Connecticut. Who are some of the under-the-radar AAA prospects who could have a big – who could have – this doesn't make sense. Okay, this is not me reading it. It was written incorrectly. So now I'm going to read it correctly because it's written like a – I think you did this on purpose.
I did not.
You did this on purpose. I've been on a very good roll reading things, and you put it on the screen like Ron Burgundy. Okay, so who are some of the under-the-radar AAA prospects who could have a big start to the year and come up, kind of like Austin did last year? He said, second, I'm fairly new, so you may have addressed this. Any chance of doing more than one podcast per week? A lot happens over a week. Yes, it does. And yes, we do have plans for more than one per week. We will not divulge those plans yet, but yes, there are plans in the works.
Top secret
stuff.
You are like Ron Burgundy. So under the radar AAA prospects who could have a big start to the year and come up is kind of interesting, because I think last year with Sanchez and Aaron Judge and obviously Tyler Austin, and all the other contributors who came up, the pitchers like Chad Green and everyone, there were more people to pick from. Now this team is so young that a lot of those players are expected. I mean, there's not many under-the-radar prospects anymore on this team.
Yeah, I think when you're talking about position players, we pretty much know about a lot of the guys that have the potential of coming up and making some noise. We have in the notes here that Keith Law was a... is the guy who, you know, did the prospect rankings for ESPN and did inside it, there was a sleeper prospect for each team. And the guy for the Yankees was Dustin Fowler, 22-year-old outfielder, was a double A. He has, you know, I think when you look at some of the projections, he's kind of like a 80 RBI, 20 steals, 20 home run type guy, kind of similar to that like Clint Frazier mold, to tell you the truth, like where we project him to potentially be, kind of an all tools, a very toolsy guy.
It's more like Ben Gamel 2.0.
That's fair. Definitely. Maybe a little bit more power than Ben Gamel if we're talking about 20 home runs, but this is a guy definitely who has the athleticism, I think. And when we're talking about outfielders, the Yankees are chock full of athletic outfielders that are about to make a mark, that are supposed to make a mark very soon. So there's a crowd, I think, with that. And that's good because they're not all going to do it. So the fact that there's a lot of them means that we should be able to get two or three or one or two, however many of these guys, to actually succeed and do well and come up to the Bronx and make an impact. So I think Dustin Fowler is the guy that's probably the easiest one to say, just because Keith Law already named it. But as far as...
Well, before you move on, sleeper by nature means that he's somebody no one is expecting, right?
Right.
So, of course, I mean, he's combing through these rosters, picking out names of players obviously he likes. He's not going to pick someone he dislikes. But it's always going to be a name that people have not heard of, or else they wouldn't be a sleeper.
Well, the other thing is that there are so many outfield prospects in AAA and who are already in the major leagues, you know, with Aaron Judge and
Frazier, Rutherford, Austin.
There's a lot of guys that are right there. And the fact you're going down, Dustin Fowler played, he was in AA, you know, that's further down the line. You're not going to be talking about him because there's so many people above him.
Yeah, he also said, Keith Law said that he might end up in the top 100 prospects next year if he has a good season. So I don't think he's someone that would impact the major league roster this year. But if he keeps progressing, and he is 22, so he's not young, he's not old though. He's kind of right in that prime of taking the next step prospect phase. Another guy that's interesting is Billy McKinney, the other player they got from the Cubs. He's older. I know he's been in the minors a lot longer. I think he's more like 25 years old, but he's someone that the Cubs kind of just gave up on because they were tired of waiting for him. But who knows what he'll do?
Well, he's also a guy that was on the top 100 last year. He was in the top 100 prospects in baseball.
Like 70 or something.
Yeah, and he was dealing with an injury. I forget what it was. I want to say it was an elbow or a knee or something along those lines. And last year was kind of a year where he was battling back from it. So, you know, if he's healthy and this kid is able to kind of capture the talent and really get to the projections where they thought he was going to be last year before the injury, then he's definitely an interesting guy to look at. Billy McKinney, for sure. That's definitely a good point. Another guy in the outfield, again, these outfield is so deep, and I always forget about mentioning him, but it's Mason Williams. I mean, Mason Williams was a high prospect coming through the Yankees, got hurt, and at the end of last year came up and made an impact, immediate impact in the major leagues. Mason Williams is one of the fastest guys in the Yankees farm system. I think he was the fastest guy until Jorge Mateo came around. So they, you know, a foot race, I think we need in Tampa to distinguish that in real life. But he's one of these guys who was one of those, you know, he was one of the outfield prospects that we were waiting for to come up and to be kind of one of those guys, one of those, the next chosen ones to come up and play in the Bronx. So
he was in the
there's
Slade
a lot
Heathcott.
Of outfield guys.
He was in the Slade Heathcott class.
Yeah, and he was another guy who didn't really work out, but was highly touted. So there's a lot of outfield.
You remember the Slade Heathcott workout video?
No, but I remember the Slade Heathcott game in Minnesota.
You sent me a picture of it.
yeah. I forgot about that. Yeah, all of the video, everybody knows about all the Instagram videos of all the Yankees players. I saw one randomly of Slade Heathcott on Instagram, and he was just like, it looked like he was taking a dump and like just sitting there and like in a, I don't know what he was doing.
It was so sad.
It was like planking in like the shitting
it was
position.
Like grainy footage. It was like the Zapruder film of Slade Heathcott.
And it was just like hashtag grinding. It was something ridiculous.
In some horseshit dump gym. Oh, I felt really bad.
Yeah, it was definitely different from all the other workout videos that we've seen this year. That's pretty funny. I forgot about that actually. But yeah, so anyway, the bottom line is there's a lot of outfield prospects. So I think when we're talking about being realistic and seeing any of these guys to come up this year to make an impact, I think you got to dip down and start looking at the pitchers because pitchers, one, can make an impact out of the blue. I think, you know, just from looking at what Chase Adams did last year, this is a guy that really wasn't, you know, on anybody's list or anybody's radar, but he had a phenomenal year. And I think sometimes pitchers can bloom
well. There's
later.
Just more opportunities for them throughout the course of a season, whether it's a rain out and you have a doubleheader that you have to call a pitcher for, or if you have a no off days for a long time and you got to call up a sixth starter. The Scranton shuttle obviously opens up a lot of doors for pitchers, so there's just a lot more opportunity.
Well, that also, but I'm also even talking about the development in the minor leagues, even because you think of the pitchers. That are coming up. Actually, a lot of them are drafted as position players and then are flipped and made pitchers. And that happens quite often. And you're seeing some of these guys who come up and don't have a lot of time pitching, so they're still getting used to the position. And that's when I think you'll see a lot of these guys, you know, blossom later too. And there are some guys like that, I think, that are in the Yankee system. A guy that comes to mind from last year who had a really good 2016 is Dietrich Enns, who was in Double A and Triple A. I think he was 12 games in Double A, 14 in Triple A, or vice versa. And I mean, the guy was throwing up some minuscule ERAs in the ones.
His stats pop off the page.
Yeah, in the ones. And this is a guy that doesn't throw hard. He's, you know, he's around 90, and that's on a good day, I think. But he's a Mike Mussina type, where you know, Greg Maddux, in the sense that he locates his pitches. And we've talked about this on the show. And I, you know, I've mentioned how I'm a big fan of the fact that if a guy is able to locate the ball, you're going to see him project through the different leagues more accurately, because you see a lot of these guys that come up that throw 100 miles an hour and then kind of fizzle off, because that's what they have. They have the 100 miles an hour. But now when we're looking around the league, you look at different teams, everybody has one or two of these guys who could throw high 90s. I mean, maybe even more than that. There's a lot more of these guys, so it's not as much of an asset anymore. But the guys who could locate are truly the unique ones, in my opinion. And those are the guys that can translate from league to league. Because if you can locate your pitches and you have that pitcher's mentality and you can pitch to be a smart pitcher, then you really do have the opportunity to take it to the next level. You don't have to throw 95 to 100 miles per hour to be a good pitcher in the major leagues. You do have to locate.
Yeah, chicks just don't dig the 5-3 put out.
It's true. They don't. But you know what it does? It saves the arm, it lowers the pitch count, and it makes our bullpen even better.
Contact around the league has been down overall. Last year was the lowest it had been in a long time. I believe since the 80s, it was the lowest contact rate across Major League Baseball. Home runs were up, but yeah. Contact was down, strikeouts were up. So that's because there's, like you said, so many power pitchers. I mean, if you threw 98 miles an hour back in 2002, you were the closer just because you threw 98 miles an hour. But now you got guys coming out in the sixth inning throwing 98 miles an hour.
And I bet the corresponding stat with the fact that there's more less contact, more home runs, more strikeouts is that you probably saw, I have no idea, but I'm just going to guess, that the average outing for a major league pitcher starter was a lot lower as well, because you're going to be throwing a lot more pitches.
Yeah.
Lots of strikeouts. The fact that if you have guys who can locate and pitch to contact, within, to their strengths, whether it's at Yankee Stadium and you're throwing ground ball, you're a ground ball pitcher. Those are the guys that can really, save a bullpen, who can help out their team in different ways. And a lot of that stuff doesn't show up on stats or saber metrics and all that crap.
That whole contact thing and pace of play. Did you see that baseball executives proposed to the players union new rules for the strike zone?
No, I haven't seen it.
Well, it's one of them that they propose getting rid of the intentional walk, which I feel like has been on the table for like 10 years at this point. What's that going to take off? 45 seconds a game? Who gives a shit?
Not after what Gary Sanchez did.
That's true. It's true. We're going to miss those kind of plays. Actually raising the strike zone from the bottom of the knees to the top of the knee to encourage more because
guys don't have their own damn strike zone anyway. It's so stupid.
To encourage more contact, so it'll be a
you look at the American League compared to the National League. The umpires, the strike zones are so very different. When you watch a National League game, the games go faster because the strike zones are, I mean, they're, it seems like they're like 3 feet bigger. It really does when you're watching those games, because the strike zone in the American League is tight. And I think if there's something that they're going to talk about, let's just open up the strike zone a little bit. Let's be a little bit more liberal with the strike zone and call those corner pitches lot more often.
I don't give a shit about the strike zone. The only way these games are going to get quicker is if they institute an actual pitch clock.
But they're not going to do it.
The only way. Okay, well, then they're not serious about it then. If they really want to shave off some minutes on these games, 20-second pitch clock, and if it goes over, it's a ball. And it's a big red light right over the dugouts.
Oh, it's so
and it's
dumb.
A
I
siren.
Hate everything about it.
So if the pitcher doesn't throw that ball after 20 seconds, the whole freaking stadium hears about it.
It's like the baseball purist's nightmare. It's
right.
Such a disgusting
thing. I'm going to watch baseball, whether it's a 2-hour and 40-minute game or a 3-hour and 10-minute game. So I don't really give a crap. I'm going to watch regardless. All it's going to do is shorten my night a few minutes. But
the thing I don't understand is, why are people not crying about all the other sports that are ridiculously long now?
Because they all have clocks. Football,
but they're
hockey,
all long.
But there's still
any professional game is a 3-hour game.
Yes,
I know.
But there's an end point. After the fourth quarter runs out, the game is over. Yeah, there might be overtime, but that also has a clock on it. There's no clock in baseball. It could go forever.
That just means people are stupid and they have to see something that's appeasing their
mental
clock.
We've discovered that society is stupid. Groundbreaking
research
on the Bronx Pinstripe Show.
It's just another kick in the ass. We're all dumb. Everybody is dumb and they have to see a clock in order to say, oh, this is faster. But no, it's not. It's not faster because halftime was 45 minutes long.
Right, well, Lady Gaga.
Unbelievable. Yeah.
You ready for the final question? It's a game from sock therapy after we asked for it last week.
Good Lord, I hope it's less complex.
It's neither 10 clues, so no. All right, sock therapy says, who am I? Clue number one, I spent my whole career with the Yankees. Clue two, I racked up the second most triples in Yankees history with 154 as a Yankee. Clue three, I rank third in career batting average with the Yankees with a .325 lifetime average among qualified players. Clue four, I rank 66th in career home runs with the Yankees with 58. That's 58 home runs, not that many. Clue five, I racked up the seventh most runs in Yankees history with 1,186. That is a lot of runs. Clue six, I racked up the ninth most singles in Yankees history with 1,345 and 14th most doubles with 309. Do you have any clue who this is so far?
Nope.
Clue seven, I'm in the Baseball Hall of Fame, but for some reason my number is not retired by the Yankees.
So stop there. That's the one that threw me off. I'm looking at that, and I'm thinking about people who are in the Hall of Fame, Yankees who are in the Hall of Fame, and they're not retired.
Yeah, because they retire that, they retire anyone's number.
Well, yeah, that's pretty obvious now. And this guy, whoever, I can't say anything. But yeah, that's that was the clue that really threw me off.
Clue number eight, despite only playing 11 years in baseball, I won 9 World Series. So this That's clue stupid. Is what got my gear spinning, because 11 years in baseball is not that many. So you figure, okay, he went to war. And he won 9 World Series.
Well, 9 World Series pretty much gave it away too.
So, okay, he was either playing in the 20s with Babe Ruth and Lou Gehrig, or he was playing in the 40s with Joe DiMaggio, and then maybe he had a World Series with Mickey Mantle. So you knew it was in that time frame.
Right.
Clue number nine, after I retired, I spent nearly 2 decades coaching. I coached with the Yankees for 9 years, and I taught my replacement, who turned out to be an all-time great like myself, about fielding in Yankee Stadium. After leaving the Yankees, I coached for a couple other teams, including the Boston Red Sox. Clue number 10, I am one of the all-time Yankee greats, but my name is often forgotten. Who am I? So,
okay.
Do you have a guess?
Yeah, so I had zero guess. I could not think of a name to actually guess that I knew was not wrong. Because like you know what I mean? Like people came to my mind, but
you knew it wasn't right.
But I knew they weren't right, and I could not think of a name that actually fit the bill. So number nine, after the clue about being in the Hall of Fame, rest of the ones, the rest of the clues from then on, like, narrowed it down for me. Like, I knew who number nine, I knew who nine was. I knew the guy who, because I narrowed down the time frame. I'm like, okay, well, if there's somebody after him who was an all-time great, then I'm like, okay, immediately I'm thinking DiMaggio. That's who I'm thinking of is the guy that succeeded him.
Yeah, you're smart. I didn't think about that clue close enough, having an all-time great follow him, because my guess was Joe Gordon, and Joe Gordon is incorrect. And I remember Joe Gordon got into the Hall of Fame kind of recently on the Players Association vote. And he was a second baseman for the Yankees. He played sometime, I knew, in the war era. And he had a lot of stats, but nothing really popped out. So you're like, all right, maybe the Yankees wouldn't retire his number because he was a good player, but not a great player. And then he just kind of got into the Hall of Fame because he's one of those guys that the Players Association loved. But it was not Joe Gordon. You ready
Real quick, the guy that I kept going back to that was like, the guy I just kept thinking of was Bill Dickey. He was the one that just kept popping into my head. And I think it's because...
But
he was in the Hall of Fame, and he's retired. Yeah. So that's what that threw me off for that. But he was the guy that kept coming to my mind, like,
because then Yogi followed.
Yeah, exactly. And then I could not think of who played center field before DiMaggio, so I had no guess.
But it's the center fielder before DiMaggio. And the clue that kind of gave it away is fielding in Yankee Stadium, because other than center field at Yankee Stadium back then with the monuments, what would have been so difficult about fielding Yankee Stadium? You're just playing a regular position. You're playing first base. You're playing catcher. That's normal. But center field was weird. So the answer, drum roll please, is Earl Combs.
Combs.
Are you sure?
Yeah. This guy's got no respect. No respect. No, I'm not sure. I'm not sure. That's the thing. Why don't we all know his name? Like, look, I think his name has come across and we've all heard his name. I could not remember it. I literally said it and I'm like, oh, never in a million years would have gotten that. But I knew he was the center fielder before DiMaggio. That I was confident, but I could not think of the name. But and that's so interesting. So, Sock, I appreciate us playing this game, because now I'm going to learn a lot more about Earl Combs and find out more about this guy.
But I got a phonetic pronunciation on it. It's Combs.
Combs. Okay. Earl Combs. Why is he not retired? Why is that the case?
So it's kind of a trick question because he wore number one for the Yankees, and number one is retired twice.
Man.
Isn't it? Oh, no.
No. It's eight retired once.
Eight retired twice. Billy Martin's one is retired once.
Yeah. Eight's retired twice.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I don't know. I don't have an answer to that. So maybe you should give us the answer to that, too. or burnt out attorney, whoever wants to take this one.
He played in the...
Help us young bucks out.
He played in the 20s with the Murderers Row teams.
Yeah, that I got with the 9 World Series. As soon as I heard that, I'm like, okay, Murderers Row.
You know, I can sense maybe there'll be a rivalry between Sock Therapy and Empire Esquire. They both seem like stats history buffs.
Yeah, they're very well could be. But so he was setting up Lou Gehrig, basically, through the whole time, and now he's really not a household name for Yankees fans at all. Why?
What do you mean he was setting up Lou Gehrig?
He was, wasn't he, I think I read somewhere that he was hitting before Lou Gehrig in the lineup.
No, Babe Ruth was. Babe Ruth was 3.
Or he was
you mean behind, protecting?
No, who was hitting 2?
Oh, I don't know.
That's what I meant. Yeah, who was hitting 2?
Who's on first? What's on second?
Yeah, I'm saying who was on base? Like these guys were setting the plate. Is what I meant.
Table
he was
setters.
One of the guys setting the plate.
The old table setters.
The table setters. The window throws.
He was the 1927 version of Brett Gardner.
Yes. Well, how many stolen bases did he have? That's what I'm looking at. But yeah, no, that was a good one.
It was a good one. It went much smoother than the last game we played.
I think because we cheated a little bit. We both looked at it. Or I cheated.
No,
I didn't cheat to the. I didn't cheat to the fact that I looked before I thought a. I just looked beforehand so we'd have a smooth recording of it.
I wrote down a guess and then I looked.
Yeah. I had zero guess. I just didn't have one. I couldn't
think
of anybody.
At least maybe would have gotten partial credit. You would have got a big fat zero.
Oh no, you got a zero also. Definitely. I'm sorry, but you know, there's no participation ribbons in this game.
All right. Thank you to everyone who submitted mailbag questions. If you want to submit mailbag questions, go to bronxpinstripes.com/podcast. You can tweet us at Yankees Podcast, at Bronx Pinstripes, at Scott Reinen, at Andrew_Rotondi. Call the voicemail line 646-480-0342. Once again, that fan shop promo code is Godzilla in honor of Hideki Matsui. Scott, any last words before we get out of here and before next week is Pitchers and Catchers?
Nothing about the current Yankees, but I do want someone to shed some light on Earl Coombs and why. Who did he sleep with? Why is he not being recognized by the New York Yankees? There's got to be a story. Let's get to it.
Let's find out next week on Yankees Podcast. All right, have a good week.
Hey guys, thanks for listening to the Bronx Pinstripe Show. Make sure you find us on iTunes and subscribe so you can get all new episodes directly onto your phone. If you do like the show, we'd love for you to take a minute and give us a 5-star rating and review in iTunes. It really helps us out and allows us to create more shows. We're on Twitter at Bronx Pinstripes and the same on Facebook. You can always find us there talking Yankee baseball. Thanks again, guys, for your support. Really appreciate it. And go Yankees.